Hello, and thank you for tuning in today for our 2019 Arts Week podcast. I am Marissa, and this is the second episode of our four-part podcast entitled Coloring Outside the Lines, where we will be discussing the arts with four different members of the King College of the Arts here at Utah State University. Today we have a senior who spent the summer in Wisconsin designing and building a set for a play. You may also know him as Mr. Arts. Thank you for being here with us today, Sterling.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I'm excited to get to know you a little bit more and to discuss. Yesterday we met with Anna and we talked about what goes on with the acting portion. So I'm excited to get to know a little bit more about behind the scenes, about how you guys work with the set design.
Right.
So before we go into that, let's get to know you a little bit more and how you ended up here at Utah State.
Well, it was kind of a long road. We moved around a lot as a family, and it's a big family of artists, and we always wanted to we kind of have our way or the highway. And so eventually we went with my dad, moved all across the United States, and we ended up here in Utah. And I went to school at Ogden High School, and I had an apprenticeship with the Lyric Company in 2014 in the summer. And my family left to Minnesota and left me there and said, okay, good luck. Hope you get a scholarship. And I said, okay, I hope I get a scholarship.
And they left you in the dust.
And they left me in Logan, Utah over that summer, yeah. And luckily I did get a scholarship. I was very, very grateful. And I was able to attend university, and here I am in the fifth year.
Here you are, your fifth year. So are you going to be graduating soon here?
I pray that I will be graduating soon. So, yes.
It's never ending. We're always here.
I know.
So how are you liking the program here at Utah State?
I love the program here. I think the program here is very unique because they give students more opportunities than any other program I've really seen. It's really common for theater programs for there to be, you know, the design professors, and if they do have a grad program, the grad students, to design every single show, and the students just help. They be the assistants, they help build the shows, but they themselves don't get the opportunity to actually design their own shows. But at Utah State, it's a really big push to have every single student have not one, but two, or maybe even three fully realized designs before they graduate. And it's a really unique opportunity, and I've been really, really lucky to work with Dennis Hassan, my mentor, and other professors here to really expand and have a wonderful portfolio going out into the professional world. So it's really great program. Yeah, I definitely love it.
That's awesome. Lots of connections with professors and other students.
Yeah.
So tell me about the process that the students go through when building a set. Do you just do some sketches and then get a team together, or how does that work?
It starts, I think, two ways. A lot of people, I mean, the first thing you have to do is you have to read the play, no matter, you know, what show you're doing. And if there isn't a play, you have to talk with the playwright, or you're trying to create an experience. But generally, you know, read a play. And then after that, you can go two ways. You either research the topic, you know, the themes of the play. You research the playwright itself, what this play meant, the time period, you know, these characters, what are their references, what are they trying to say. Or you can take the feelings that you got out of the play and just start drawing and create 20 or 30 thumbs. And these are just tiny little squares of a theater, and just try to use shapes and form to create the feeling that you felt when first reading the play. Because the set really is there to facilitate the play. The set can't be the most important thing. You know, you are here to make those words make more sense than they possibly could if it was just in a black space, right? So you are here to facilitate. So how can your set, how can your shapes, how can your forms say what this play is saying, but subtly, and help it at the same time? So it's, you know, it's sometimes you want to start with research, sometimes you want to start with thumbs, it really depends. And then from there you move on, talk to the director, and they give you more ideas, sit down, design, build a model box maybe, play, check with the director, and eventually you'll have a set, and then you'll kind of meet with everybody, and we'll all kind of talk and approve, disapprove, input, output, you know, collaborate, and you go back to the drawing board, fix a few things, and then you have your set. Send it out to everybody, start building, and go to town. So yeah, that's the general basic structure there.
So do you guys build everything by yourself then, just backstage? How long does it take to do that?
Well, we don't build everything. It depends. We have one show going on designed by one of our grad students, Tommy. He's a hoot. And a lot of his set is using recycled materials from off-site storage, because we have two shows that are going to be huge build shows. So that's going to be interesting. Generally it takes about 4 weeks to build a show, go into tech week, into tech week, and then you have about a week of tech, and then a week of dress, and then you're done. But the show has to be built before tech week, hopefully. Hopefully everything is finished. Our job should be done by tech week.
And what is tech week?
Tech week is a week where we are in the theater, the actors are told that it's kind of the time period where we're going to work all the kinks out with the technology. So we start implementing the lights, we implement the sound, we'll implement microphones, all the things that could and will go wrong, we have to work out. Mm-hmm. So the lighting designer already knows what he's going to do, but now he has to actually do it with the actors on stage, push cues, and the director will say, light's not hitting this actor here, can we fix that? Okay, hold. Everybody stops. Type, cue. Okay, go. He hits the button, lights on that person's face now. Move on. And so it's just working through the entire show, making sure it looks perfect, sounds perfect, is perfect, so we have a final product before we see anything. There's 2 or 3 weeks of grinding just polishing just to make sure that it's a very clean transition for each scene, to each costume change, whatever. And then after tech week, get into final dress, and that's when you implement the costumes. The costumes generally might only have 3 days to get things perfect, so they're slammed and working their little butts off. So it's a little grinding days, and it's hard on the actors and it's hard on the tech people, but that's kind of what we do it for. That's the fun part.
Yeah.
It's tech week.
And it sounds like, just listening to what you're saying, it sounds like you're implementing so much more than just the elements of design. You probably have a lot of math to go into there of making sure everything is measured correctly, and then mm-hmm. you gotta look from that point of view to make sure that everything is functioning mm-hmm. correctly. So there's a lot more than just drawing pretty pictures and building it.
Yeah, it is a lot more than that. I like to think it's just that, because that's the fun part, But then you gotta sit down and draft it all and make sure that all your edge seams measure up. You have to make sure that your space is correct. You have to go down and measure all your furniture and fit it inside the space. And, so it's not like advanced geometry or anything. We're doing pretty basic mm-hmm. math, but, it's a lot of, you have to check on, 48 things, and then gotta go get all this furniture, and you've got 38 furniture pieces, and then you got all these little shelf pieces, and so it's not, we're not doing crazy advanced stuff, but we are mm-hmm. doing really simple stuff in an insanely short amount of time. When you put all of it together, okay, well, lights can't hit that if this is here. The sound has to have some sort of space. We have to have 3 feet off the back wall, so how can we cut these walls down? And it's a lot of just sitting down and just talking to people.
A lot of problem solving.
A lot of problem solving. And that's the best part, is you have to do it with other people. If I just wanted to do it all by myself, it would be so boring and, hard and difficult, and I'd get so frustrated. But I can just go to people, my technical director, the person that really, really sits down and makes the build plates, which are, the flats and whatnot. And he'll be like, okay, you're an idiot. Here's how you should do this. Here's how you did it. Here's how we can fix it. Oh, you're right. You're so right. Let's figure out the best way that we can all move forward without, having any more hubbubs caused by a strangely designed piece of scenery. Because there are lots of those. And even though that might be essential to me, I think that shape is perfect and it has to be there. If it can't be there because of lights or whatever, you have to compromise. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. Is we're all compromising and we're all collaborating to create one play.
It's a group.
Yeah, it's a huge group artistic process, and not one person is more important than the other. We always like to think, oh, the actors, they're so important. All the techies, they're at the bottom. But really, sure, actors can put on any show anywhere, but it's kind of better if it's in a theater and have all these beautiful elements, and it can really add. So
Yeah.
It's a big collaborative process, and that's what I love about it. So I'm definitely I'm an introvert extrovert. I don't even know, you know, whatever. I like to sit at home at all times, but I get incredibly bored if I'm not surrounded by other artists and trying to do something cool. That's, you know, that's the best part.
So tell me about your favorite production that you've worked on. No, you're telling me about how you spent the summer in Wisconsin. Tell me about that.
Right. So I think that was my favorite production I ever worked on. It was for this little children's theater there. It's their 24th year. And Julie Stryker runs the program. Julie, if you're listening to this, I love you. You're incredible. You're an inspiration. She has been running this little children's theater almost completely on her own. And they generally just have like black walls, black flats and risers, you know, if they were donated from the music camp down the road, you know, that they're so old and beat up, but they, you know, and these old lights. But everything works, everything functions, you know, we're all working together. And then I came in and I said, you know, I really would like to build something for you guys, make something really immersive, really cool. And so they had this play that was set in an old castle in the forest. And I said, well, let's just make them the same thing. This old castle has become a forest. And so I had these big trees on stage, and our budget was like $50. And so we got a whole bunch of donated paint, and I got string and metal wire and butcher's brown paper, gigantic roll of butcher's paper. And me and these kids would come in at like 3 o'clock in the morning, because that's the only time I could work. I had worked as a bartender there. So I'd come in at 3, and there'd be like 12 kids. I don't know how their parents, even if the parents knew that they were there. But we would just be crumpling paper and painting things, and I'd be helping them out, and they'd be inputting, and they'd be like, can this branch go up here? Absolutely that branch can go up there. Let's do it. You know, climbing up ladders and doing all these sorts of things, probably breaking every OSHA rule known to man. But it was beautiful to have an environment where it was, I think one of the reasons why it was my favorite was because it was all mine. I didn't have a professor. I didn't have anybody from school helping me.
You were free.
Yes, I was free, and this was my project. You know, it was my grubby little hands were all over every piece. And I really, really enjoyed working with people that every single answer was yes. And if it wasn't yes, it was, how can we make this happen? Because in theater, the professionalized, industrialized theater, there have to be so many collaborations and so many things I have to give up to give to somebody else for whatever reason. You know, I really want a drop. No, we can't do a drop. Okay, you know. But their answer was, you can't do this. It was always, let's figure out a way to do this. You know, it was endlessly about problem solving and real, real problem solving with people that they wanted to see everything happen without question. Everything I wanted, they wanted to have happen. And everything they wanted, I wanted to have happen. And the director wanted, you know, half the stage to be black and the other half of the stage white. And I said, okay, I'll repaint half of it because I loved the idea. I thought it was so cool. And I went back and I repainted things, and it really, really helped, you know. And so I guess probably why it was my favorite production is it was my own project, and I needed to get out of school. So finish school, Sterling.
You're so close.
So close. So close. Yeah, it was a good time. Anybody who needs to have a good trip, go up to Madeline Island, Wisconsin. There's nothing better. It's a little crazy, but beautiful.
That's what makes it fun, right? When there's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So, a $50 budget.
Yeah, it was $50.
What are normal budgets like? Obviously, that's a pretty small budget, but
yeah, it was pretty minuscule.
Comparatively, what is it?
It really depends on the production of theater. I think a pretty average budget for like a set, strictly the set, is around like $2,500 to $4,000. And that's for like regional theaters, community theaters. I think that's a pretty basic budget because you can't really buy wood if you want to build a room for anything more or anything less than that. And budgets can go from there all the way up to, I mean, some Broadway shows are $10 million sets, you know, with hydraulics and dragons, you know, and everything you could humanly imagine they'll have. And then, like, after Broadway, it's like opera sets. And these things are, you know, art pieces of their own, because unlike theater, if you do an opera, you can't really upstage an opera singer. as hard as you can try.
Mm-hmm.
You can upstage an actor saying a line. That's pretty, you know, it's kind of easy if you just have these two gigantic human faces coming down and a tongue like they're standing on. You know, that's like, okay, there's something else to look at than Hamlet giving a monologue. But if someone's really busting out singing, you can't upstage them. So in opera, you can do anything you want, which is, that's you know, one thing that I really want to do someday is try to be involved in an opera production, because that's where you can do your wildest imaginations, and it'll still work.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, that was going to lead me to my next question. Where do you see yourself, if everything goes according to your plan or according to
mm-hmm.
your wishes, what are you going to be doing in 5 years?
Oh, 5 years? If everything I plan out goes perfectly, in 5 years, I'll be a resident worker at an opera company or a ballet company. So let's say in 5 years, I would really like to be an assistant set designer, a scenic painter, a lighting, you know, intern or you know, but someone that, or like a props master or someone in charge of the shop that buys paint, something that is, that I have a job that I can go to every single day and, you know, kind of keep going. And then after that job, I, you know, at the end of that 5 years or something, I want to get an actual set design position at the Santa Fe Opera or something, you know. But I would really like to have a not a summer job, but like in the middle of winter, I'm still working because they're not hiring anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a you know, quick job or anything. It's just my job. My job.
You want to have something steady.
Well, yeah, a steady job. That's exactly mm-hmm. right. That's exactly right.
So where is the best place to live for this kind of career?
It's impossible to know. There, you know, it could be Salzburg. It could be New York. It could be Colorado. It could be Chicago, it could be Dallas, it could be San Francisco, it could be Salt Lake, you know, because everywhere there is theater, whether we really see it there or not,
mm-hmm.
it's there somewhere. And, you know, it's always fun, and I would really, some friends and we're trying to start our own little theater company. And
oh, fun.
Yeah, it's kind of a new development, and we're trying to start it in either Austin or Memphis.
Mm.
And in 5 years, if that doesn't work out, certainly that's, you know, I want to be at an opera company. And that's like my immediate response, because that's kind of what I've been, that's what I've been trained to do. You know, I gotta get a job. But, you know, it would also be really cool to, we have our own little theater company and create our own new works. And I want to start a children's theater out of it, you know.
So you're building this theater production. How are you going to get yourself noticed? How are you going to stand out? How are you going to be successful in this business that is deemed and looked on as so difficult to get big in?
I think the thing that you have to do to get big, and don't ask me, I actually have no idea how to get really the answer to this question, but my own philosophy in it is, don't actually try to get big. You know, I don't, it would be great, sure, it would be great if I designed for Broadway and then designed 2 Oscar seasons. I mean, that would be awesome, right? Everybody wants that. But I think I'd be really, really content creating small-scale theater for small-scale audiences that are really, really high quality. Because there's so many theater productions, community theater, local theater, that, you know, sometimes their sets just aren't up to par because people aren't maybe dedicated enough or don't have the time, and really it's that they don't have the time. And I want to be a designer that I might be able to work on a larger house, but that's really not the goal, you know. And I think in the super grand scheme of things, in my heart of hearts, I just want to create theater that can change people's lives like it did for me. You know, I want to create an environment and an image and a feeling that is translatable, that a community can really feel. And I think that that's more important than you know, really trying to be successful. And I don't want to be a Broadway designer. Screw that world. You know, I think it's really kind of just quite terrifying. I would really, really enjoy not doing that. So I don't think that success is the goal. Mm-hmm. Success isn't my goal. At least big success. I do want to be successful. I want to pay my bills, which I guess is success. And I want to, you know, get out of debt and whatnot, which is success to a degree. So.
But you're talking about finding joy and just doing what you love,
exactly.
Even if you don't get noticed doing
exactly,
it.
Exactly. I. It's not important. I think that we have such an obsession with being noticed,
mm-hmm.
and being successful and looking at, you know, these big names, you know, celebrities. Oh, I want to be like them. I want to be big. I want to be successful. And it's like, well, were your parents? Probably not. Are they happy? Probably not. Because we're kind of stuck in this mindset of, oh, we got to do this. We got to be big. We got to do this. It's like, well, do you want to just kind of have fun? I kind of just have the most fun when I'm with friends at a bar or, you know, creating theater with a whole bunch of kids. I don't think I would have a lot of fun in the big world with all these really fancy people with millions of dollars. You know, that just doesn't really sound like fun to me. You know, it sounds exciting and it sounds different and it sounds, you know, it sounds successful, right? That's our idea of success. But I think that, you know, life is far more simple than that, and it should be. I'm content with my life as a little theater designer for a kids' theater, because that little kid, if I can help them, that means more to me than 10 million people seeing it, because I don't know those 10 million people, but I can see that kid's face, and that's important. That's a connection. So that's really what art and theater is about. It's about making a connection. And if those connections don't exist, if you don't feel like you're actually connected to the people you're presenting your art to, I feel like it's not worth it at that point. This art is too, you know, it's for a community, it's about a community. Every single play is about some playwright's young childhood or mind in some way, and he's trying to give back to that community. He's trying to let them know that he's thinking about them, and he wants to create something, and I want to have the people that are around me feel like I want to create something for them. And that's really what I want to be doing in whatever way. And opera is a very unique way to do that, and that's a whole new story, but you know, it's a different way to connect that's very unique that I think we should try to go back to. But it's all about connections, and I don't feel like making a big connection is more important than making a small connection.
So exactly. It's all about having other people view your art rather than getting the glory for what you're doing. It's kind of what I'm getting at what you're saying.
Yeah, more or less. It's just about the people that care about you.
Okay, so for my last question to wrap things up, what advice do you have for students who are going into your field or just art students here at USU?
Yeah.
I feel like you have good advice for anyone. What's your advice for people?
I think my advice for if I was to give advice, let's say that if I was to give advice to myself or somebody like me, which I think I'm just like everyone because I'm just a schmuck, it's like, what are the things that I finally started to realize what the things are that make me happy, you know? And they're so freaking simple. It's so simple. It's like, have a glass of Ovaltine, you know, have a cup of SpaghettiOs, you know, or hang out with friends, call my mom, you know? And these super simple little things mean more to me than my entire college career, because I think, you know, deep down, it is all about connections and it is all about people. And even though SpaghettiOs is not a person, it is a memory of my past, and you know, it's a memory of my mom always handing me SpaghettiOs when I was sick. And Ovaltine was, I always had Nesquik, and then we moved with my dad to Indiana, and he's like, have you kids ever had Ovaltine? No, I've never had Nesquik since. Because it was just that one memory I had, like, I have to have Ovaltine. And, you know, these tiny little things of happiness, I think we gloss over so often with you know, I don't want to just be that person that hammers on, you know, social media is the worst. And it's not. I use Instagram and Facebook, and that's about it. But, you know, that's enough for me. I can barely keep up. But those enough kind of just disconnect me from my family and disconnect me from just simple little everyday things that I think are very important. And I think it's a beautiful tool to use. And as an artist, we need to be more social media conscious. But you need to look back at what the things are that really make you happy, sitting down and sketching and not being worried about if you post it or not. It's just because, you know, cool, if you post something, you know, and if you're really proud of it, that's all that matters. But making sure that you're proud of your work to start with, and that you, and those simple, you know, I want to paint a can of SpaghettiOs right now, because that sounds so much fun. You know, that there's nothing else I'd like to do. But go back to your roots, I think, is always, always the best thing. Going back, and probably because everybody's going to talk about this, you know, I can't move very quickly in my mind, I guess. And social media moves so quick, and I like going back, because it seems like I'm going back to when I was a kid and I didn't have to think so much, I suppose.
No, it made sense.
No, okay.
Great. It reminds me, I think you'll appreciate this. I once heard somebody compare life to a video game.
Oh.
And I don't play a lot of video games, but they talked about how if you're not having fun in the journey, which is the whole entire video game, like,
true,
what makes you think you're going to have fun when you get
that's
to the
true.
Very
that's
end?
That's such a good quote. It's about the journey, not the destination.
Yeah, especially as an artist, if you're not having fun just working towards your career or working towards what you're going to be doing,
mm-hmm,
why do you think you're going to have fun when you actually graduate or reach the end of the career?
Yeah.
It's about the journey.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, sure.
Sterling, again, this is Mr. Arts here, represented Utah State University. And I am so excited for everybody to hear your great wisdom that you gave to us today that all of us can take, whether artists or not.
Oh, yeah. Just don't listen to that last little bit. It was a horrible rant.
No, it was great. And please tune in for the third section of our 4-part podcast, when we are going to be interviewing visual arts, a photographer here, and we will continue talking about how there is an artist in all of us and how we can all grow together. Thanks so much.